So I'm going to talk about Exchange Web Services. I am an escalation engineer in the developer support team at Microsoft, and so we support all kinds of protocols. As Andrew talked about earlier, he did an overview of the protocols, of the Exchange protocols. This is one of them. I'll show you a little bit about where that sits in the protocol space, and then we'll take a look. Mainly what I want to do is take a look at examples of the protocol and how you can code against the protocol. So we'll do this kind of briefly, but let's do an overview first, and let's take a look at what it is. So what I'm going to talk about here is a little bit about the open specs. The open specifications, you guys have already been introduced to them, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but just where EWS lives in that space. I do mention AutoDiscover, but I'm going to skip through a lot of that because it's very complicated and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, and it's not directly, it is part of the protocol, but it's not directly getting into the meat of actually running operations and things like that. So that's what I want to talk about. And then EWS versioning and the schema, I'll just briefly mention that. And then the operations and examples. So that's kind of where I want to go with this, and we're going to take a look at those, and then the APIs you can use to code against it. And let's go. Okay, so what is EWS? So you've heard a little bit from Andrew about the Exchange protocols. There are actually several of them out there that you can use that Exchange servers will talk to your client applications using. This one is an alternative to MAPI, basically. It's a very full, rich feature set of operations that you can perform against Exchange servers. But the alternative is it's not a binary protocol like MAPI is. So it's a little bit easier to read. And it's HTTP and SOAP-based, which gives it some advantages. And I'll talk about that on the next slide. So basically, if you can do HTTP gets and posts, and you know how to put together a SOAP or XML body using SOAP, then you're good. You can call Exchange and you can tell it to do all kinds of great things for you. So as I mentioned here, of course, email clients would use this. Service applications could use it too, because there's a lot of other functions that are included that aren't just messaging. Web apps can make use of this because they're making web-based calls, so anything that lives in a web app can do this. It has a number of different functions, and one example of that that's outside of just the straight messaging, like sending an email or getting items on a mailbox, is something like e-discovery, and it does have some specific operations that help with searching mailboxes, looking for the needle in the haystack kind of thing. Okay. So the benefits, one of the benefits that's important to differentiate it from some of the other protocols, of course MAPI is the main one that is used by Outlook, but this one also, like MAPI, can do modifications of items on the server. So that's one big benefit. It's not just for syncing. You can do synchronization, but you can also do updates on the server. It's also web-based, so it doesn't have problems with going across firewalls. So it's well-suited for that kind of thing. But it's also secure. You use HTTPS to communicate with the Exchange server. It's intuitive and readable. For things like diagnostics and troubleshooting, so that's another benefit over MAPI. And then the great thing is that using Exchange Web Services, you can do it from just about any platform or language that allows you to make these kind of HTTP calls. So you could just do raw HTTP calls and do Exchange Web Services. You don't have to have a domain-specific language or a library that's tailored for it. You can just be able to make these calls. So here, I just wanted to mention that some of the clients that use Exchange Web Services, for example, Outlook does use it. Its main protocol that uses is MAPI, but it has added a number of a subset of EWS functions over time, including things like availability and OOF and room lists and things like that. So it does make use of EWS. And Outlook for Mac uses it exclusively. Link and SharePoint use it for things like availability and contacts. And then Apple's Mail application is also compatible and uses EWS. And then there's a couple of others here listed. So EWS is being used, and it is supported by Exchange servers starting in 2007. And before that, just a historical note, before that, it was WebDAV was the web-based protocol, and it was much slower for syncing. And then currently we have support for EWS in 2016, and I'll show you some updates for what's new in this protocol there. Okay. So I wanted to talk briefly about the versioning for EWS. So like ActiveSync and some of the other protocols, we have versions, and so you know what is included, the scope of operations in the protocol. EWS also has this concept of versioning. And the EWS's version scheme, if you will, is set up based on the schemas for the XML and the WSDL SOAP descriptions. So when a client application is making a call, making a request to an Exchange server, it's important for it to designate what is the EWS schema that it's targeting, what version of the schema it's targeting. In this case, I show an example using the header, the SOAP header, request server version with a version of Exchange 2010. I'll show you a list of all of them in just a minute. What this does is the client is telling the server, these are the set of functions I'm going to be using. And it's important to do that because if it targets a version outside of that or something more than that, there's a chance that it will get an error if that server doesn't support that version, that schema version. So the client needs to use the version that targets the minimum set of functions it will be using in its code. And then in the response, we see the server version, which is tied to the schema version that it supports. So let me just show you this illustration. So this is from our open specifications, and I've got a couple slides on this in just a minute. Our open specifications in OXWSC data detail the request server version values, the enumeration that can be used. And for example, in 2007 SP1 version of the schema, there's core functionality, including the ones I've listed here, things like availability out of office, notifications, that kind of thing. In 2013, more were added. So the way it works is that each new service pack or RTM or each new release adds functionality, and what they actually do is they take the new schema with the new functionality and they include all the old functionality and then just rename the old schemas with versions on the server. So they're all in the virtual directory. And you can look at those. But the point is that if you're talking to Exchange 2016, you do get the full functionality of the older schemas. And here's what it looks like, the versioning and the updating mechanism. So with each new version, the new schema includes the previous ones and then gets renamed to be the base schema name, like messages.xsd. So that includes all of the core functionality for EWS. Okay. And just a note here, that because these live in the actual schema files and WSDL files live in the virtual directory of the Exchange server, you can actually hit the Exchange server file itself and look at the full WSDL and schema for that instance, for that running instance of the Exchange server. So in this case, this is the WSDL file. You could use SVC util or some other utility to read that in and build a proxy, a wrapper, set of wrapper classes to code against all the operations in this version of EWS. Okay, and messages and types, just showing you that these are kind of all available. You can download them directly from the server if you really want to. If you've got the server address and you know how to hit it, you just go ahead and download them. But they're also fully specified in the open specifications. So you can take a look there, and we do make notes of when new features were added and updated. Okay? So this just shows where EWS sits in the list, the family of protocols for Exchange Server. And it's mainly used by the messaging clients, so you see it connected here amongst other ones, WebDAV and RPC and MAPI over HTTP and a number of other ones. So the core or the set of EWS open specifications that are the documents that are listed in our OpenSpecs library are listed here. And I mentioned some of the main ones, core, MSG, folder, contacts. That's OXWS core, MSG, folder. These are the main ones for working with items on the mailbox, like email messages, contact items in your contacts folder. There's also calendaring meetings, and then the folders themselves. And then the core and data are the... So the data, OXWSC data, defines the base types that are used by the EWS protocol. And OXWS core defines the operations that make use of those types, and those are the base operations. And then most of the other, like MSG, folder, contacts, things like that, they are derived from the core types. And when I say types, I'm talking about XSD, I'm talking about schemas. So they are, because this is all XML-based, and I'll show you plenty of examples so you get the idea. But they are derived from these types and sometimes extend them. Okay. So you see the groupings here. We've got, you know, the core messaging. Auto-discover is something, you know, there's a number of configuration auto-discover protocols that Exchange Server it provides, and we'll talk. And these allow you, I'll show you in the next couple of slides, these allow you to find the Exchange Server to talk to based on just an email address. And then there's a number of utility protocols and transfer synchronization. It's an extremely rich protocols, so there's a number of functions beyond just working with mailbox items. Okay. So just to give you a quick little update onto what's new, if you're already familiar with the open specifications and you're familiar with the EWS or Exchange Web Services documents, this is just an update on what's been added for 2016. I won't go through all the previous versions, but what's been added. So we've got now a new document, OXWS item ID, which describes the item ID algorithm. And that's actually kind of important because we've had a lot of questions about that item ID. And I'm going to talk about item ID, change key, shape, and the things that are needed to talk to and work with these items. And so this is kind of it's always been sort of a little bit of a source of confusion. You know, what is this item ID, even though it's really an opaque value that you don't need to know about. But there's always been some confusion, been some questions, so we did document this fully. And then we also have the online personal search, which is a new feature, and then a number of updates to existing types to support some of these new updates. Oh, and a new function and new operation in the contacts protocol specification, which is OXWS cont and the CONT, and that is the set user photo. So there was previously get user photo. This is the user profile in your contacts, and set user photo uploads it allows you to actually modify that and upload a photograph. So another couple of quick notes here. How do I get the open specifications for Exchange? I've given a link here. You can also just do a search for Exchange server protocols. Okay, and I am not going to spend a lot of time on this because I want to kind of save time for taking a look at some code. But I'll just briefly mention that AutoDiscover is, the goal of AutoDiscover is to find a URL, ultimately, is to find the URL to talk to an Exchange server, because after all, that is, without that, you don't have anything. So there's a number of protocols involved. It's a somewhat complex process. The first protocol that we have that deals with this is OX Disco. This is actually extensions to LDAP and DNS to allow you to find AutoDiscover servers. OX DISCLI and ADISC. These are used together to find, once you found an AutoDiscover server, you can now find information about the user, about their mailbox, all kinds of configuration information. You can ultimately also find, and on the next slide I'll go into this, the things like for an organization, whether they need an internal or external URL versus just a straight URL, because sometimes there's firewalls involved and other proxies and things like that. Okay, so just roughly, here's the process. Querying DAP and DNS servers, we start with that, including some HTTP redirection, and this is all based on the ODISCO protocol first to find an AutoDiscover server. Okay, and then once we have the URL for an AutoDiscover server, we take a couple of different, the algorithm will take a couple of different approaches depending on where the user sits in an organization or whether it's on the internet. There's a number of different things in the algorithm that determine this, but depending on what kind of AutoDiscover server we're talking to, we're going to use one of these two different protocols, and these are the formats of the URLs that we use to talk to them. And then finally, we arrive at a URL. So I've oversimplified this greatly because I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but ultimately that's the process. There is a resource I've added at the end of this talk that goes into it in great detail and tells you, you know, exactly step by step what you need to do. The best recommendation is to find a framework or something that does this for you, so you don't have to go through this every time. It's kind of a tricky process, and there's a lot of pitfalls, a lot of places you can get stuck. And here's a example of a response from the first, actually that first URL type from OXWS DISCLI. And this is one where we have in the response the EWS URL, so you see it highlighted here. So that's our goal, is to get back a response like this. I forgot to mention that at the beginning of that process, we start with an email address and a password. So those are the two required things that you need. I think I had it on the slide, I forgot to mention it, but those are the two required things. And then from there, we can pick apart the domain part of the email address and formulate these URLs. And ultimately, the goal is to come up with a response like this, where we can now talk to the Exchange server. Okay. So one thing that can help you understand the process a little bit is tracing through the process, and Outlook actually has this ability. You can control shift right click on the task icon for Outlook and come up with this test email auto configuration component. Okay. And put in your username, your email address, SMTP address, and password, and you'll end up with the output from the response that, from hopefully if it's successful, from the auto discover process. So that's one way you can get a glimpse into the process. There's another, also we can use a tool that I'll introduce shortly, and that tool has a lot of rich logging and it really is helpful to understand this process. Okay, so just quickly to go through some of the functions of Exchange Web Services Protocol, some of the basic ones, I just wanted to mention, so I already talked about OXWS Core, and OXWS should be CData, not data. These define the base types, operations and types, things like get and copy and send and update. These are all defined in the general case in those two protocols. They are extended or overridden in the other documents when we talk about specific items like calendars and folders and meetings. So some of the things you'll need to actually operate on these items are an item ID, a change key, and a shape. Generally, those are the things that we look for. An item ID is a base64 encoded string. It has up to 512 bytes, and so it's kind of a long string. You'll see this in the response, in the both the responses and requests that we use. Item IDs identify any of the items that we work with on an Exchange server, so we can uniquely identify a particular folder or email item or anything. And as I said, we describe the algorithm, how Exchange actually comes up with these IDs. But from your perspective as a programmer, as the client programmer, you can think of these as opaque IDs. Okay? Change key is something that represents the version of that item. Okay? So it's kind of like the state, the current state. So if you've got multiple clients actually working on a meeting request or making changes to it or updating it or something, you use the change key to say, this is the version I know about and I'm working with. Exchange can let you know if that is not the current version. Okay? And then the shape is really just a way to tell Exchange, what properties am I expecting back? Like, what does this thing look like? And there's really only three, for the shape itself, there's only three. You can add additional properties in your request, and we'll see this in some of the request examples, but there's only three values here, all properties, default, and ID only. So all properties, obviously that means that we're asking Exchange for all the properties available for this item. The default properties would be only the default ones that the Exchange defines, and then ID only is telling Exchange, I don't want all the properties. All I want is the IDs, because I'm just going to then go ahead and turn around and make another request, like a get item or something, for that ID. And at that point, I'll look at the properties. Okay, so some of the groupings, you know, like I said, I would just wanted to mention these. I'll go quickly through these, but OXWS MSG has, and many of these have the same functions and operational, you know, names like get item, copy item, defined. They just have slightly different semantics depending on what item you're working with. So get item, copy item moves a message from one folder to another. create items. So if you're going to send an email, you would create an item first, and then you would call the send mail or send operation. And the create item would return the ID, the new ID of the item. So here's an example of a get item request. And this is just an excerpt, of course, but this is what it looks like. So we've got the get item message in the body. We've got the item shape. We're asking for IDs only. And then the item IDs here is referring to the parent folder that this get item is requesting from. Or I'm sorry, not the parent folder. This item ID is actually identifying the item we want. So we're looking for ID only, but we've also asked for an additional property, the item class. So it would be like IPM note or something like that. Okay, so these are all defined in OXWS Core and OXWS CData. Okay, and then folder operations, very much similar. Just a note, things like move folder, includes everything. Everything would move with the folder when you do the move folder operation. And then another important thing when you're working with folders, you may not want to be using the ID only or the name to identify it. You may actually want to identify the default folders or the distinguished folder ID names. And these are all listed in OXWS CData as well, over here on the right. Okay. So you can target your contacts or your inbox if you don't have the ID already, and that's nice. Okay. Appointments, meetings, calendars, or meetings and contacts all use very similar or the same operation construct, but they just have different semantics. Depending on which one of those two specs we're talking about. And then the calendar item type and the contact item type. Another thing I'll probably do before we get too far into the examples is I'll bring up one of the specifications to show you quickly how you navigate these types, because sometimes that's a little bit confusing. Okay. We also have SRCH, the specification for searching, and this is handy for finding folders and finding items in folders. And they work based on restrictions and query strings. So query string is kind of based on advanced query string format, and this is something you can use to narrow down your search with examples like subject colon or to colon or things like that. So the You use a string that identifies the property and then the value after that. So it's a very simple format, but it's handy for using in the find item request. And I should have I have an example here. So here we have a find folder operation, and we're asking for all properties, and we're doing this based on the inbox. So the parent folder ID we're going to start with is the inbox. So we're looking for everything under the inbox as a folder, every subfolder, and we're asking for all the properties on it. And then here's an example of the response. And you see here we have a collection of folders. So if you look here, we've got the response message and then the folder collection here, folders, and then we'll see a number of these folder sections with the folder ID, the parent ID, the class, and in this case, we're asking for a number of properties, and this happens to be from my mailbox, so I happen to have an underscore Tom folder in there. Oh, and it actually had item count, so number of items. You can see I've got quite a few things in my Tom folder. Guess I need to clean that out. Child folder counts, so number of folders under my Tom folder. And then another, you know, and I'm not going to go through all of the functional and operational groups because there are quite a few of them, but I just wanted to give you an idea of, you know, we do have things like data transfer and synchronization. Data transfer actually is interesting. It allows you to do like an export and an import of or upload of items, and it does it in pretty much a binary blob. So it's intended really to be more like for the application that wants to be a repository or backup or something for a folder or for a mailbox. So you really can't read or enumerate any of the items in the information that comes back. You're just storing it and then replacing it. And synchronization also allows you to synchronize folders, much like you can do with something like ActiveSync. Okay. Another example of a functionality you'll see in that you'll see use something like Link or Outlook will use this in calendaring when you're scheduling meetings, get user availability. So this one's kind of interesting, and I think you know, we talk about this in our ActiveSync talk as well. It uses the same kind of concepts. Basically, you're looking for a number of mailboxes or a number of users, and you're trying to find the common availability that they have, or the availability they have in common. So we end up working with a free busy view type in our request to say this is the range of times, and then we get back things like a free busy merged free busy string, which is just a condensed way of saying what the, you know, what we have, what the available times are for all the user accounts that were requested. So this is an example of a get availability request. Here I'm asking for, you know, me, and then there's a number of others in the request. And then you see here we get back, actually this is still the request. I don't have the response, but I have an example of this I'm gonna run for you later or in just a few minutes. But this is an example of the request where you can say, you know, here are my start and end times, so this is the window I want to look for availability for all these users. And then this would be the merge, since I said I want the merged only view response, this is going to be an encoded, for this range of time, it's an encoded string that tells me, you know, where do I have free and busy, you know, and oof time. So, and it's all just coded very simply by using these numbers. Okay, so yeah, so now what I wanted to do is just go ahead and get to bringing up a tool and show you some of the requests and responses that we can make and what they look like. And so let's go ahead and do that. Pause the presentation. There we go. Okay, so this is EWS Editor. I'll do a little bit of an overview over EWS Editor in a couple of slides, but let's just use the tool first and see what we can do with it. So I have here, this is a part of EWS Editor that allows you to craft posts, HTTP posts, to an Exchange server. So part of the process here, it's already doing the auto-discover, it's already making the initial connection, authenticating you with the Exchange server. All you have to do is, and you can see here, we've got the EWS URL that was given back to us by the auto-discover. All you have to do is craft your request. And I've got some requests I've put together ahead of time, so we can take a look at these. So in this case, this is a finding a calendar item. So I'm doing a find item here, and I'm looking for a calendar item. And the way I do this, this is just simply using find item and pointing to the calendar distinguished folder ID. And then, you know, and I'm giving it the body that I'm looking for. I'm looking for a body that has these words in it. So let's take a look at this. And let's go ahead and put this into the EWS editor. Move this out of the way. This is a previous one I was working with. Okay. And we'll just say run. So that's our request. And you can see down below, we just have HTTP response codes, so 200 says it was okay. That doesn't always mean that you have a good EWS call. You may actually have an error within the call, so you can get a good HTTP response, but then you have to go in here and look and see if your item response has a no error or an error in it. And in our case, we have no error. And let's just go ahead and pull this out because this is really small. We'll pull this out and put it into our, copy this and put it into an editor. Okay. There it is. So this is the response we got back. Find item response messages, we get these following items. Calendar item, and you see the properties. The item ID here, this is the Base64 encoded item ID that I mentioned before. And here's the change key that says I am currently working with this version. This is the first time I've made this call, so this is gonna be the and I'm hopefully the only one working on this, but I still need a change key in case someone else is updating this particular item or will be in the future. And then here is the information. So I have subject, start, end time, and I have not included the whole body in this, so I don't see everything that's included in it, but at least I have that much information. So you can see that with a simple XML call like this, you can retrieve calendar data, you can retrieve, you know, any items on the mailbox. This could be useful if you have a JavaScript add-in for Office and you want to retrieve appointments and maybe display them in a task pane or something like that. You could use this and easily take this and convert it into some HTML output and display this in your add-in. Okay. So let's take a look at one more example. And then we'll just look at the tools. Let's see, we'll do maybe we'll do two more. So we'll do this one. This one's kind of interesting. Okay, in this one, I'm going to create a meeting. So I'm actually doing a create item request. And this is in my calendar. So I'm doing a create item request for a meeting. And I've given it all the properties. I've got subject. I want to do EWS talk with, and I've actually included Andrew, my colleague, here in the back. And I'm going to send him an invite. So I'm going to create this meeting request, and it should show up in his calendar as an invite for this meeting. So, and I want to show this as busy, and here are the times on the 22nd, that's tomorrow. And then here's the text. So actually, so I told him this is a test. You know, we don't want to really meet, but maybe we do actually. So let's take this and oops. Go over to our post, copy it in. Okay, so we have our meeting request here. Let's run this. And hopefully, oh, we got a bad request. Maybe I didn't copy this right. Do that again. Yep. Okay. Try that again. This time it works. Copy this. We'll pull it in here. And you can see I got an item ID back and a change key. So that tells me that I have a valid item on the mailbox. And if I take a look at my mailbox, go to my calendar and look at the 22nd. There. So here I have, and Andrew should also have this in his calendar. So. Okay. Good. Let me then, for the sake of time, I'll move on, and we will go over the tools. So, back to the presentation. Okay. So, I wanted to also mention the fact that doing these raw posts makes it very flexible. And you can use this within any platform and any language that will support doing raw HTTP posts. But it is a little bit cumbersome and detailed. So we have the EWS Managed API. This is a framework that we've created that wraps extensively many of the types and operations in the Exchange Web Services protocol. It is available on GitHub. Its current version is 2.5. You can also get it on Microsoft Download. It is extremely powerful, and it allows you to use C# to make a lot of these calls and use very intuitively named classes and types. And so I've given the link for the documentation and the sort of getting started information here. an EWS managed API application that's going to start using these classes to call the operations and use the types has this simple structure as its initial stages. So in these 10 steps, what's that saying? Five? Cool. So in these 10 steps, you can start using the managed API. It's very simple to get started. Okay. We've got the Exchange Service itself. That's the class that connects you to the Exchange Server. You define the Web Credentials class, which defines the password and SMTP address. You've got the AutoDiscover class, or AutoDiscover property of the service. And that once you set that, the Exchange Service class will go out and do all this AutoDiscover stuff that I mentioned that's very complicated, so you don't have to do it. And then you start working with things like email messages, and you create them, set their properties, add to subject body, things like that, and call send. So really, a very straightforward, simple way to work with these. Okay, so I'm going to quickly bring up some code here to show you. Okay, so I've got this document. I've created a simple ribbon control that I'm using with C Sharp. And what I'd like to do is be able to quickly just update this template and add information, contact and address information from my email contacts. So I'm going to go ahead and type here a name, and then I'm going to go to the add-in ribbon and pull down my list. So what I just did here is I went out to my mailbox with the EWS managed API, pulled down a list of contacts that were searched using Jibo, my last name. So here's a bunch of my family members. I'm going to set up this flyer, and I'm going to have the location for this event that I'm doing, I'll have it be at Marissa. This is a cousin of mine. Okay, so now I have, didn't work. Try that again. Oh, I know why. Because I didn't tell it what I wanted to add here. So I want to add first name, last name, and street, city, state, zip. So now, it was supposed to add that. You know what I think I did? I think I updated my contacts with that. Okay, not working. Let me try another one here. Okay, so you get the idea. The formatting is not great, but the idea is you can insert from your contacts using the managed API. And that's a simple example of one that you can do. Okay, so I was going to show you the code, but I want to quickly just show you the tools since I'm running out of time and go back to my slides. And if you guys want to see the code that you can use to do that kind of thing, I can work with you guys afterwards. And some of that you might be able to use for your add-in ideas. You could also just use JavaScript to make some of these calls. So, for example, using JavaScript, you can use make EWS request async. That's only for Outlook add-ins. And then for the general case, there's the XML HTTP request object, which is very handy. Okay, so some of the tools. So I showed you EWS Editor. This is an extremely powerful tool. I do want to make sure I mention this before the talk is over. So this one I've showed you, I didn't show you the log viewer. So the log viewer is extremely helpful. Every time the EWS editor does something for you, like auto-discover or a post or something, it's doing trace logs, and this is the log viewer, and you can actually take a look at all the output from the log viewer and see exactly what it was doing. This is a very helpful tool to understand how EWS protocol works. So we also have the auto-discover function within EWS editor. This is another menu item off the tools menu, and this one allows you to try different ways to do auto-discover, and it'll show you the errors, and it'll also show you the complete path it took to try to figure out where the server was and find you in a URL. Okay, so that's very useful. And then post is the thing we were just using, and that's something you can play with and do some experiments with to try to understand the protocol. Message Analyzer also supports the EWS protocol with parsers. One note is a note that you need to know about is that the SOAP action header needs to be included in the HTTP header in order for the parsers to be used. Okay, and Fiddler, of course, is another tool you can make use of. And then we also have test suites available for download. And these are extremely useful when you're doing server-side implementation, especially to test your implementations. And these are based on C# and Visual Studio with the test framework. Okay. And then just some resources for you. So if you get stuck and you're using the protocol itself and implementing, please feel free to email DocHelp@Microsoft.com or go to one of our community forums listed here. Okay, and then I've added some references for you for later. And I've included here some blogs, and I'll actually probably be updating this as we go forward. So that's it. I didn't put a question slide, but are there any questions about the protocol?